Welcome in to the Blinking Coverage Podcast. We are here for another exit interview, and fittingly, it is Sunday, March the 7th. As we sit here with no football, I am joined by my co-host Jack Wallace, because we have nothing better to do. Well, it is college basketball season. It is March.
We'll leave that.
But we'll leave that for Tuesday because it's a Sunday and there's no football on. So we're going to podcast instead. We're going to talk about football.
Indeed, it's a great day to talk about football. And today's episode is on the AFC South. So for everyone that has forgotten already, that's the Tennessee Titans, the Indianapolis Colts, the Houston Texans, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're going to be going through these teams in the order in which they finished in the divisional rounds. And, of course, this is the same format we did for our previous exit interview. With these format exactly, there is no specific order you need to watch it in, even though we have it ordered in our episodes just for our sake. But the first one was on the AFC North. That one is available. So if you want to check that one out, go ahead and do so. This one on the South, of course, today, this will be dropping when this releases. It'll be some point in the middle of our spring break. So in a few days from now. And then next up, we're going to be looking at the AFC East in a week. So just keep on track with that. Of course, afterwards, we'll get to the NFC all the way through to the 2021 NFL Draft. But starting off here, we're going to kick it off with your defending AFC South champions, the Tennessee Titans, 11-5 this past season, of course, first in the division, made the 4 seed in the AFC and lost to the 5 seed Baltimore Ravens in the wild card round. So what are some, and asking you, Noah, because I know this is your team. So what are some of the best and worst moments of the season? I put a few down on here, but wanted to see if you had anything else to add on sort of what were the biggest highlights, biggest lowlights on the Titans.
So, I mean, obviously the highlight is we went 11-5. We did better than 9-7. I'm actually not sure what my exact prediction was as far as wins for this team. And I don't even remember really whether I went over or under. I may have even called for a push there at 9-7 because coming off of 3 straight years of 9-7. I mean, 3 straight years of being 1 win better than Jeff Fisher. Like, think about that.
That is a good comparison.
And despite the fact that the Titans went to the AFC Championship in 2019, 2020, there seemed to be a lack of optimism around this team and a lack of optimism around Ryan Tannehill. And there were a lot of really great moments throughout the year. I mean, you look at through the 11 games, not all of them were pretty. Not all of them were great performances by all of our players, but we are getting breakout performances from the players that we need breakout performances from when we need breakout performances from them. And this was a team that faced a lot of adversity. Taylor Lewan got hurt. They dealt with injuries up and down the offensive line all year. They didn't get any production, any help, any value whatsoever out of Isaiah Wilson, who is one of the biggest busts in first round history.
I had something written about him.
Jayon Brown got hurt later in the year. That's our best linebacker on the field right there. And to cap it off, we get no help out of Jadeveon Clowney after game 4 or 5. And then we get no help whatsoever from Vic Beasley, which leaves us with let me see if I can remember here. We got sacks from, I think, Wyatt Ray. There was some guy, I don't even remember his name. That might have been Wyatt Ray. I don't even remember. The dude with the long curly hair. He played at Texas Tech, I think, back in the day, but he got a sack. I mean, dudes you've never heard of are coming in to rush the passer for this team. And they still won 11-5, still made the playoffs, still played a home playoff game, and still had a lot of very redeeming moments throughout the year, like having the league's most efficient offense, like having a 2,000-yard rusher, the 8th 2,000-yard rusher in NFL history and the 2nd in team history. There were good moments across the board. Ryan Tannehill was clutch this year. A.J. Brown played through injuries all year and still had a standout year and made the Pro Bowl. There were some great things that happened for this team this year, but there were some spots where it really, really went wrong. And that started when they couldn't run the ball. Whenever they were having trouble running the ball, that then you can't set up the play action game. We know they love those crossing routes about 10 yards that they can pull the linebackers 10 to 15 yards. If they can get the safeties to drop back a little bit, that free safety, and then they get the linebackers to bite on the run fake because of Henry, they can sneak in Corey Davis and AJ Brown right in that 10 to 15 yard range. And that is the most frequent passing play that the Titans run. They love to run that play. But when Derrick Henry is not running the ball well, when you can stop Derrick Henry by sitting back on your toes a little bit, when you have a dominant defensive line that's winning the line of scrimmage and getting that initial push, there was really nothing that the Titans could do. This is an offense that needs to have all its pieces together in order to work, and all the pieces have to feed off of one another. And going into an offseason where now you're losing your offensive coordinator, now you're having to you're having to re-sign a lot of guys. You're having to piece this puzzle back together to make it work like a well-oiled machine once again. I'm optimistic because I trust our management and I trust our front office, but I'm cautiously optimistic at that. I think this has the potential to be a real disaster, especially if Ryan Tannehill falls off, and especially if we don't get guys like Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith back in the building.
I'm still surprised you haven't shouted out Samuel Sloman for the field goal that got y'all the title, because I knew that was at least my most exciting moment watching as someone that was a pretty neutral fan. But I really love that for my old high school mate. We love to see a person immortalized into Titan history on
Titans legend after one game. Exactly, one game played.
It was pretty amazing seeing the comments after that of a guy that just had to come in off a practice squad and ended up getting the kick they needed, especially a kicker that was mostly known for being inconsistent on that season
especially
with the Rams.
Especially if you've watched the Titans kick footballs.
Yes. Yes. People were a little not too optimistic about that, but it was exciting to see. Only the notes I had on this is the defense was ranked 24th out of 32 teams, which, yeah, I know you all have plenty to say about the defense. I mean, you know, said a good bunch already, but yeah, the defense was a disaster for this team. And honestly, I didn't have this mentioned here, but I just wanted to say, is the AFC South the worst defensive division in football? Because I think it is.
It might be, especially when you talk about pass rush, because while the Indianapolis Colts are very good, they're top 10 in the league in quarterback hurry percentage. Three of the other teams in the AFC South are in the bottom 10 of those rankings. And the Titans and the Jags are both in the bottom five, with the Texans having the sixth worst hurry percentage in the league.
Yeah, it's just not good. So moving on to our positions, what are some positions you think are pretty safe for the Titans and ones that are unsafe? I had a few thoughts in here, but I'll have you go first on who do you think is sort of on your safe, least safe list.
Well, I expect us to keep the band together as far as the O-line is concerned. I mean, Dennis Kelly slid right into that right tackle position. He's not the ideal right tackle. He's not a Jack Conklin. Yeah. He's not a guy with that ceiling as far as what he can do for your run game, but he fits in so perfectly with the rest of that talented Titans offensive line that I think that's really a position that maybe you get some insurance there. Maybe you take a flyer on a guy without a lot of risk at some point, whether that's later in the draft or in free agency, or maybe even through the trade market. We know that John Robinson is no stranger to making trades. I think the offensive line should stay together. I also think absolutely Derrick Henry and Darrington Evans are pretty solid in that backfield. I think the backfield is solid there. And Tannehill, I mean, they're going to keep him around for another year, 100%. It's going to happen. I mean, this is a guy that they've given a lot of money to. But the real question about him is, can he perform in the playoffs? Because if we take a look at Ryan Tannehill's playoff game log, he didn't play in Miami's loss to Pittsburgh in 2016. He got hurt that year. But in his four games with the Titans, Game one. This is against New England in the wild card round of last year's playoff, or 2 years ago's playoff, the 2019 playoff. 8 for 15, 53% completion, 72 yards, one touchdown. One interception to go along with that. Took one sack in that game. The next week against Baltimore, 7 for 14, 88 yards, two touchdowns. And now while he did make plays in that game, he wasn't particularly impressive at any point in time. Then against Kansas City, takes three sacks, 21 for 31 because they had to pass the ball more when they were down in the second half. And while he had a pretty good game, it wasn't like he was pushing the ball downfield at an incredible pace. They weren't ever getting any explosive plays against Kansas City in that game. And then you look at it again. What happens when Derrick Henry can't run the ball? Like, it's exactly what happened in the AFC Championship of 2019. When Derrick Henry can't run the ball, Ryan Tannehill, we look at his stats, 18 for 26, 165 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Now, six playoff touchdowns to two playoff interceptions in 2 years, four games, is not a bad rate at all. I would take six touchdowns in the playoffs in four games for my quarterback any day of the week. But at the end of the day, if you can't run the ball, your quarterback has to be able to give you more upside than Ryan Tannehill can. So how do we make this team better at running the ball, and how do we give Ryan Tannehill more weapons? Really, I think the key is just getting the band back together, but they need one more guy in the receiving corps, a reliable guy, maybe a young guy. They need one more guy in this receiving corps. If we can bring Corey Davis back, which it seems like there's mutual interest on both sides, seems like Corey wants to stay as long as we give him a respectable offer. I think I would go as far as to say Corey Davis even bought a house in Nashville recently, a pretty nice house, and he plans to stay there if the Titans will give him a respectable offer. Now, the Titans already cut Adam Humphries. We should see some more big-time cap sacrifices, cap dumps, whatever.
Yeah, getting rid of some of that.
They're going to trim the fat off the salary for sure. But I would expect to see Jonnu Smith back. I would expect to see Corey Davis back. I would expect us to go after some receiver, whether that be in the middle of the draft or maybe in like the second round. And I expect us to address the pass rush first overall. That is the first priority overall, is addressing the pass rush. Whether we can bring Desmond King back, whether we can work something out there, that I don't know. We have a lot of defensive backs. We drafted two defensive backs last year. Malcolm Butler is still on the roster, but he may be one of those cap sacrifices. So it's an offseason with a lot of moving parts for the Titans. And I can't sit here and tell John Robinson what to do, but I can certainly say what should be the priority, and the pass rush has to be the priority. We have to get better depth on defense, more depth in the linebacking core, and depth on the offensive line. We honestly need backup offensive linemen that can step in and play a big role.
Well, to think about, that's one of the biggest things of the draft is looking at it and seeing where the picks lie in the first round, because the Titans have the 22nd. Well, the Colts have the 21st, and I think both these teams may be looking for some edge help here. And so seeing if guys like Quiddy Payne for Michigan, Gregory Rousseau for Miami, maybe even Zaven Collins for Tulsa, it's probably going to be first picking going to a team like the Colts that we're about to get into. And seeing if the Titans can maybe recoup that, or maybe if the Colts go a different direction. I just know obviously the Titans need more than the Colts, but maybe if the Colts might want to poach one of those picks away. But yeah, in those first rounds, seven picks overall for the Titans. They have the 22nd in the first round, as I mentioned, the 53rd pick in the second round, and the 85th pick in the third. So pretty standard for the draft so far for the Titans. We'll, of course, be updating on our regular podcast if any of that changes. We're still keeping track of all of these and seeing if we get some weird moves before the draft. Of course, we know there's always going to be moves during it, so we'll be excited to cover that when it gets there. So you have anything else to add before we move on?
No, that was it. I know that was a very long-winded explanation.
But it's your team. It's your team.
The Titans, but yeah. That is my team. I feel passionately about it. I'm wearing a Tennessee Titans sweatshirt, in fact, right now. But we can move on to talk about a team that I quite frankly hate talking about, which is the Indianapolis Colts.
I'll take care of it then.
I hate the Indianapolis Colts, but the Indianapolis Colts were good last year. They had a really good year, and they almost won a playoff game against Buffalo. That was a well fought game. I'm really interested to see what this team gets out of Carson Wentz this year.
Yeah, this is a very interesting team because they finished second in division, and they actually really well tied the Titans at 11-5. It was just, of course, lost on the tiebreaker, but seventh in the AFC. They lost, of course, to Buffalo in the wild card round, as you said, but it was sort of the experiment of what can Philip Rivers do. And then now, of course, Philip Rivers is gone and retired. And it's just interesting to see now with Carson Wentz, what is that going to look like? Because you have Jonathan Taylor and an incredibly good rookie running back. You have an offensive line that they did have a slight down year, but they still were a top 10 O-line. I think it was number 7 in PFF. So still a very good O-line, but just not the best. And so the question I have for the Colts is that you have all of the pieces for Carson Wentz to succeed and absolutely no excuses if he doesn't. And yeah, there's an argument maybe with wide receiver help that's not like the best, but you have Jonathan Taylor going into his second year. You have a great offensive line. You have good coaching. It's I really see it as this is your opportunity to really go off. And then even seeing with rushing on defense, second best rush defense in the league in both yardage and yards allowed. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like the Colts are set up really, really well to have a really great year this year. And it's just like the quarterbacks they've had have been Philip Rivers, who's a great all-time quarterback, but like, is he really good enough to get big playoff wins and deliver in the postseason? Not really. And it proved that. And then if you even want to go on to Carson Wentz, a player who has had a miserable down year after having a really great years, but it's been like 4 or 5 years since that, what can Carson Wentz bring to the table? And even when he was at Philly, he still had a mostly good offensive line. He still had some weapons on him. I mean, I know you could argue the Colts is better, which I think I would agree with, but
see, it wasn't like he was in the worst possible situation in Philly. Because his offense did him no favors after 2017. The offense got worse and worse every year and got more injured every year. And it became
clear. I meant overall, yeah.
It became clear at a certain point that Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar were not successful receivers in that offense, and why they never really addressed it until last year, getting Jalen Reagor, who again got hurt. I don't know. So that's my kind of beef with Carson Wentz, right? Is that no, the organization didn't do him any favors. Yes, I think Carson Wentz did himself a lot of favors with the way that he played, despite carrying the Eagles to the playoffs in 2019, despite having no receivers on that offense whatsoever. Greg Ward was the leading receiver that year. However, and I just don't know what I've seen on the field from Carson Wentz in the last 3 years. It's respectable that he got that Philly team to 9 wins into the playoffs. It's respectable that he had a good year, but by the eye test, by judging what I see on the field, I just don't know how confident I feel about Carson Wentz really being able to have success. But the last time we saw him have great success at an MVP level was with Frank Reich.
And I still think that he can be a good player in this. And again, I'm still excited to see how that functions, but I'm just not extremely confident simply because it had been such a bad system. And I don't know. It's been really hard to really believe in Carson Wentz the last few years. And yes, I think a good chunk of that is because of having no help. I mean, that is true. Obviously, Philly has not been any good over the last little bit, but I'm very interested to see. Looking at some of the positions on this team, quarterback, I still was kind of keeping in the least safe section only because it's very obvious this is an experiment putting Wentz in. I think that there's no one really trying to argue this is like a franchise quarterback Deshaun Watson situation. Not to disrespect Wentz, because I don't think he's a bad quarterback by any means, but I think it is kind of obvious that it is being put in to see what can this quarterback do with our system, because that's basically what the Colts have been doing since Luck retired, has been just plugging people in and seeing how it works. So I think to that degree, it's very much if he it doesn't perform really well, I don't see him being in India very long. Go ahead.
I do have a reason for optimism, and let me show it to you statistically. Philip Rivers had a bad offensive line in San Diego, LA, whatever you want to call it. With the Chargers, he had a bad offensive line. He had bad offensive lines for years with the Chargers. I mean, that's that the Chargers haven't had a good offensive line in years. He gets to the Colts. What happens? He has more success as far as winning football games when he's taking less sacks. He took way, way less sacks in 2020 than he did in 2019. Carson Wentz, very similarly, took a ton of sacks last year. I mean, he has, let's count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games where he took 5 or more sacks in 2019. I mean, in 2020, that is. So I think that Carson Wentz can come into this team with a good offensive line, have a lot more time to throw, have a little bit more time to process, and maybe be able to cut down on some of those turnovers that were plaguing him so often this year.
And I think that will be an interesting thing to keep on the watch out for, especially in a very, very tumultuous AFC South. Looking at some other positions here, the defense for the Colts was a position that I know we were just dogging the defense of the AFC South, but it was one of the few bad parts of this team. The interior D-line is very solid with Buckner on this team. I'm really loving what they've done with him. But the D-end, pretty much everyone is leaving for free agency here. This team really needs someone to replace in at the defensive end position. Look for them to replace that stat. It's probably their biggest need right now. Also, at cornerbacks, very interesting because Xavier Rhodes left Minnesota to come here and was actually pretty decent. His coverage rate was not that bad. He wasn't any kind of all-pro talent, but he did play pretty well in this position. Yet, they don't know if he's going to come back yet. Rock Ya-Sin was not exactly the greatest replacement, but I will be pretty shocked if the Colts don't re-sign him if Rhodes indeed end up walking. So I think the cornerback position is just a little bit unstable right now. I don't think it's necessarily bad. I just think it needs to be stabilized a bit. Same thing with the safety position as well. I know Trayvon Merriman from TCU has been a big hot target to look to go to Indianapolis. I have him as one of the guys I could see them looking at in the later first round. And kind of for that same reason, because I think that it's a position that they just need a little help in, because we know the defense has been very good for Indianapolis for a while, but that's just a position they can bolster a little bit more.
Right.
Same thing with running back and offensive line is these are positions that, I mean, I don't think they're going to touch at all.
Yeah. I mean, with some of these better teams, right, it's less about, I mean, there are free agents that they have to re-sign, right? But it's less about adding big pieces to the team. And it's a little bit more, I think, for some of these teams about getting depth and getting enough guys that you can rotate in and out and have enough guys that can contribute that aren't just your starting 22.
And so looking at the NFL draft preview for this team, they have 6 picks overall, none in the third round, but they have the 54th pick in the second. And as I mentioned before, the 21st in the first round. And again, Fitz here, if they don't sign someone in free agency, they got to get somebody at D-end. They have everybody walking. They have to put someone else in here. And again, someone at cornerback or someone at safety, I think, would also work here. At Eric Stokes out of Georgia, Sean Wade out of Ohio State, and then maybe a Zaven Collins from Tulsa, Gregory Rousseau from Miami at that edge position. These are some of the guys I think that may end up helping this defense out just to boost it a little more. Again, I know the defense was pretty solid. Most parts of this team overall are pretty solid. As we mentioned, they're a top 10 defensive and offensive team. So these are just some pieces I think that may end up working on it.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to the pride of the AFC South, my favorite team to talk about. In fact, I think I like talking about this team more than Titans. The Houston Texans were god-awful last year in a year that got Bill O'Brien fired, which I mean – I'm not exactly happy about, but it was the correct move for them. One that we had kind of been calling for a while as objective football fans. But this was a bad team last year, and that was thanks to their defense. And that was thanks to Bill O'Brien completely gutting this roster, which now has a humongous salary cap problem and a whole lot of roster spots that they need to fill. So I think I'm just going to come out and say it. The most obvious, and I don't know, I mean, it's the most Texans thing ever. Same reason they kept Bill O'Brien around for long enough and gave him GM power. Why haven't they traded Deshaun Watson yet? You can't tell me that teams haven't come calling with ridiculous offers. Maybe they're just trying to drive the price up and drive the price up. But, I mean, in today's NFL, you're not going to get one of those NBA-style trades where you're going to get four future first-rounders. That's just not going to happen. That's not how it works.
This team, I mean, I even wrote a list of, like, and to mention before I get into it, some things that were positive about this team, because there were a couple of positive things, to be fair. They committed the second fewest penalties in the league. So good for them on that. They somehow didn't finish last despite only four wins, which again with picks wise means nothing, but hooray, you didn't get the Wooden Spoon Award. And they only threw three picks all season, which was the fewest in the league. The next second on that list had more than twice as many. So of course that was entirely Deshaun, but that is something commendable for them. So that's the only thing I have to say positively. Negatively, with J.J. Watt leaving, Watson basically refusing to play football, the second worst defense in the NFL, O-line ranked 23rd, 30th in run blocking. Tunsil was basically the only person decent there. Nine turnovers, only team to get below double digits. Nine turnovers forced, only forced nine turnovers all season, which is astounding. And the worst part of it all is not only do they not have any first-round picks, but they don't even have any second-round picks. Their first pick of the draft is the 67th pick. Why are they not trading Watson? He's a 25-year-old quarterback who's a phenomenal player who wants to play somewhere else, and that wherever else that will give the Texans so much in return. They will get so many young players or at least young picks. I don't know why they don't give it up. He's worth so much to the NFL, and keeping him around, especially if they keep him for the whole next season, he's not going to play. And that's just going to cost you even more money, and you get nothing out of it. So I don't know what the Texans are trying to think here, because even if you try to force them to do something, you would pretty much doubt that forcing players to do something is not exactly the best way to get them to play at their best level.
Right, and I believe Deshaun Watson when he says he would rather retire than play football for the Texans again. Absolutely believe him.
Oh my God. Because
this is a garbage organization and everyone knows it. Everyone knows that Kyle McNair, who is the owner, is completely destroying this team from the top down. And here's the thing. I understand their reluctance to trade Deshaun Watson. I think everyone understands the reluctance to trade a guy who has potential to be the MVP of the league, I think.
But you got to do it now. You don't have anything else. There's nothing to build.
But at the same time, what do you trade for an MVP?
Well, because that actually – okay, to go off that, that is the one counterpoint, is that – if they don't get a better offer for it, and if it ends up just not being a good offer, then you're screwed.
If Patrick Mahomes wanted out of Kansas City, and I'm not saying that Deshaun Watson is as accomplished as Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's He's capable of playing at the same MVP level. If Lamar Jackson, if Patrick Mahomes
The right coaching, now. The help on that team. Not but saying yeah, Mahomes yeah, yeah, yeah. is not great, but like obviously has infinite more help than Watson's ever had. Yeah, right. I mean, that's
We're not debating that here. I'm saying if a player at his level, a top five quarterback in the league, an MVP caliber player, think Tom Brady in his prime, think Aaron Rodgers, like a young Aaron Rodgers, what is the trade value for that? You've got to think it's a starting level player, a starting caliber player, a good starting caliber player, maybe with a young guy with Pro Bowl potential. And then a whole host of picks and maybe even a couple more players. But think about in the grand scheme of football where you have to have 22 guys on the field all in sync at once. How much that would just gut your team. Who's going to give that up?
Yeah. And I really don't know who, because I don't know who has all that ready to go. Because even if you look at a team like the Jaguars, who we're going to get to later, even they have a whole host of picks and they're not any good, but like, there are so many pieces on the Jaguars and I'm excited about. Like, they're right. Like at least they have that.
And all I want to say about the Houston Texans is, and we'll get into some of the bad things, but I just can't comprehend what they're doing right now, and I'm in such a wait and see mode. I have nothing I can say about this team definitively, any predictions that I can make what they should do, because they're in such a bad situation to begin with, and we don't know what they're going to get for Watson.
Like, it's still kind of mind blowing. Like, I have never seen a team like this that has gotten themselves this. I mean, the only other time I've seen a team down this terribly in terms of making decisions like that was arguably the Nets after making the whole massive Pierce and Garnett trade. And then right after all that, then being like, oh, because they're old now. And I get it's a different situation, but like the point of giving everything away to get guys that end up really not being that good. And then for just years are just irrelevant. But of course we see the Nets now coming out of that and being a favorite,
but it took 10 years, but you know what happens with that? You know what happens every time, not every time, but many times, the owner ends up selling the team because the team is only a cash cow as long as you're not gutting it from the inside out and making it a joke to everybody. Right.
And that's a true point there. But even, and one more note on this team, because I know you said about not picking your, I didn't even have anything listed for best fits because I have no, anyone could fit. You got to put anybody here. So really
pick,
about the draft,
pick someone. I mean, pick the best overall player. They fit.
They have to get someone in. And then looking at some of the players on this team that at least are going to be here at some point, I think basically the entire defense needs to have an overhaul. Wide receiver, Fuller is going to be a free agent. They still need to fill the hole of the Hopkins departure. Some of the safer position here, Tunsil at tackle actually has been good. He hasn't been amazing or any like world beating, but there is no reason to get rid of him. At least for now, he's still been solid. Roby at cornerback has been pretty decent, had a somewhat higher rating among all quarterbacks. And Akins at tight end has also been pretty decent. Again, not great, but he was serviceable, was in the top 20 tight ends.
I actually disagree with the cornerback being a safe position here. They've got,
well, at least meant him. I mean,
they've got they've got three cornerbacks, all of whom were bad last year, that are going to be free agents this upcoming year. And I don't necessarily think Bradley Roby is a number one caliber corner in the NFL.
No, again, I was saying decent. And based on the stats of his play, I don't think that he was bad by any means, but I also don't think he's like a starting number one star corner or whatever. But I wouldn't say he was terrible compared to a lot of other corners, especially in this division that we've talked about. Some teams really need some help there.
Certainly the
including safety, the Jaguars, but
certainly the safest player in the secondary, no pun intended, is Justin Reed.
Yeah. That could make sense. All right, we can now move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars, our final team here. And ironically, I still don't think the worst team, at least worst position team. The Jaguars were 1-15 last year, which is a shockingly terrible record, I know. Obviously, fourth in the division and no playoffs. At least the good news out of this is they were so terrible that they are going to get pretty much whatever they want with draft. And they did beat the Colts in week one, which I guess if you're a Jags fan, must have been pretty funny to at least beat the Colts this year, which aged like milk every single week. Tackles were very poor on this team. O-line overall was ranked 22nd, mostly because Linder was still very solid at center. I think he was number 4 in the league at the center position. So the interior O-line's actually pretty good for this Jacksonville team, but the tackles or not. So that made things a little complicated. Also, the defense was absolutely horrible. Second worst defense in the league. Very, very bad defense here. Need a lot of help on that end. So, yeah, the Jaguars are a team that, again, is not a good football team, but there is a lot on this team that I'm happy about because Robinson at running back was a great pickup. Undrafted running back, fantastic at that position. The combination of Shark and Chenault. I know LaVisca Chenault wasn't amazing, but at least at the wide receiver position, I think it's been going
Johnson
well for this team.
Was good last year too.
Yes. Like there are a lot of pieces on this offense that have me actually really optimistic. And I know it's again, the Jaguars and a team that's not been really decent since that crazy AFC championship run, which should have been a Super Bowl run, but
they have some exciting defensive players as well.
Yeah. Like I really don't think this team is going to be remotely this bad next season, especially with the number one overall pick, which we all know is going to be Trevor Lawrence, quarterback from Clemson. I don't think there's any debate at this point. I think that's been a locked up deal for months now. But yeah, Trevor's going to go number one of this team. They have the 25th pick as well in the first round, 2 second round picks with a 33rd and 45th, and then the 65th overall pick in the third round. 11 overall selections for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that's why this team has a lot of optimism for me, is you have 11 picks, a lot of early picks, and a team that has a lot to work around. And it's a very young team. There's a lot that needs to be worked on this team. New coach, they're redoing a lot of stuff. But Jacksonville is a team that I would bet a lot of money on is not going to finish last next year.
And I think that all depends, not all of it, but a lot of it depends on how Urban Meyer translates to the pro game.
Yes.
How is Urban Meyer going to bring his sort of coaching philosophy and his brand of football to the NFL? We saw it not work with Nick Saban, the best college coach of all time. So I'm not going to sit here and act like it's a given that Urban Meyer is going to come in and be a great coach in the NFL. Especially with, we've seen him coach good college quarterbacks, but we've never seen him coach a quarterback that ended up being good in the NFL. That's a fact.
That's a pretty accurate.
None of his quarterbacks, Tim Tebow, greatest college quarterback of all time, won one playoff game and got more publicity for taking a knee than anything else. JT Barrett,
that's fair.
Cardale Jones. I mean, we're just rattling off guys.
I ain't come here to play school.
Great college quarterbacks, championship winning college quarterbacks, terrible NFL quarterbacks. So why are we expecting that just because Trevor Lawrence was a great college quarterback that now Urban Meyer is going to be the guy to bring out the best in Trevor Lawrence, to lead him to success? But I mean, the counter argument is obviously Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence have both won national championships at the college level, and putting those guys together as they kind of grow into this NFL experience could be very beneficial just in terms of trying to piece together the best and most accomplished team that you can.
Exactly. And that's the challenge for the Jaguars, is going to see how can that all mix together and what could make for some very interesting storylines, and really what make the AFC South, as someone that I know is not connected nearly as much this as you, because I'm all NFC South, but it is a very interesting division to think about. It's got a lot of very entertaining storylines. We're going to be looking very much forward to that come this fall, and seeing what can happen out of this and what can end up being the teams to shine, which are the ones that are going to fall off. And I think it can all be a very interesting play here.
Early prediction. So that is your, early prediction. Who's your champion next year?
I think Carson Wentz is the X factor for everything, because if he ends up being really good, I believe it's going to be the Colts, because I think their better defense is going to be the reason why they get through. Texans could go 0-16. I think that's not even that hot of a take. And I think the Jags could win as many as 6 games, depending on how good Urban is. And I think if Wentz can really be a decent, a solid quarterback there, I think the Colts can end up winning it.
I'm going to pencil in the Jags for 3 games. I think they get 3 games at least next year. Not saying that their record is definitively going to be 3-13. Like, my early prediction is at least 3 wins for that, which I know is a low bar. I think
I'm pretty high. 6-10 is a high jump.
I'm with you. I think the Texans are going to be horrendous. But
they're going to win maybe a game.
But depending on what they get back, I mean, if you can get some guys on their rookie deals that can make an impact, I mean, this team could win a few games next year. It's not out of the question, depending on what they get back for Watson. But that's really the question there. So that leaves us
sit.
So that leaves us with a 2-team race for the AFC South, which is exactly what we got this year.
Yep, and I wouldn't really be particularly surprised at all.
And seeing how the trend has gone with the Colts and the Titans sort of flip-flopping, and I know the Texans have been mixed in there too as AFC South champions, but in terms of usually the Colts and the Titans are 1-2 and just kind of flip-flopping. So based on that, I think since the Titans won last year, I think next year is the Colts year. I think it's the Titans still make the playoffs, absolutely. In a 7-team playoff round, like I think the Titans could absolutely make the playoffs. But yeah, I think it's going to be the Colts here next year.
And I'd have to agree with you. So with that being all, this will conclude our second of our total of 8 NFL exit interviews for the 2020 to 2021 season. We are all excited for all of you to be here with us throughout this series. We thank you all for tuning in on this AFC South special episode, and we will catch you all next week when we go over the AFC East with the resurging Bills. Is that all from you today?
That is all from me today from Fort Worth, Texas. Sunny Fort Worth, Texas. It's beautiful outside today. I am Noah Parker.
And I'm Jack Wallace.
Peace out, y'all.
Peace out, y'all.